This is the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders. Here's your host, JT the Brick.
Welcome to the official Raiders podcast. I'm your host, JT. Big podcast lined up because the Silver and Black are 2-0, coming off their 45-10 win in the home opener against the Jets. We'll take a look back at that game, but this podcast is about the Redskins, the first of five primetime games as the Silver and Black head back to the nation's capital for Sunday night football coming up at FedEx Field. What a week for the Silver and Black. Look at all the attention that they're getting, and the Raiders are off to that 2-0 start in the AFC West, but so is Denver. So is Kansas City. So everybody's got their sleeves rolled up, and this is a big game coming up here because, again, as I said so far on the first two editions of the podcast, they got to beat the better teams. They got to beat the teams they're supposed to beat, and the Raiders have to build momentum. And with the Redskins coming off a win and all of the different matchups in this one, this will be a big one for Jack Del Rio and his staff. Ian Eagle is going to join us. He called the game, the Jets and the Raiders, on CBS. He's pound for pound one of the best broadcasters in all of sports. The voice of the Redskins, Larry Michael, will check in. We'll talk to Eddie Pascal from Alameda, the Raiders facility, and one of the premier, period, Raider insiders out there, Ed Graney of the Las Vegas Review-Journal. He's covering the Raiders now and does an unbelievable job. He wins the Nevada Sports Writer of the Year Award. He's fantastic. What an addition to the Raiders coverage that you're going to get in years to come. But we start off looking back at that win, and that was a tighter game than I thought because you look at halftime and what happened in the score, the Raiders really had to roll up their sleeves to put the Jets away, and they ended up winning that game comfortably. The star of the game was Michael Crabtree, who was completely locked in with Derek Carr.
Derek goes in the shotgun. They're going to go empty now. Three go right. From in to out, Jared Cook, Cordero Patterson, Michael Crabtree, and Larry Cooper in the slot, watched by a linebacker, and then Seth Roberts. Carr going to lob one right side. Crabtree, comeback catch, and he's in the end zone again. Touchdown, Raiders!
Crabtree, six receptions for 80 yards and three touchdowns. He's now recorded 20 touchdowns since he joined the Raiders in 2015, which is tied for fourth most in the NFL over that span. He was electric in that game, but a lot of the fans showed up. When I was in the parking lot before the game, all of the 24 jerseys, beast mode. This was his real regular season homecoming, and he didn't disappoint.
Third down and goal on the two-yard line. Lynch to Carr's left in the gun. Two by two. Crabtree, Cooper right. They give it to Marshawn. Marshawn in the end zone. Touchdown! Raiders! A beastly touchdown for Marshawn. His first as a Raider.
Yeah, he had 12 carries on the day for 45 yards and that touchdown. Great to see. We'll get to him dancing a little bit later on as the crowd was electric throughout the game. But I love the balance of the Silver and Black in this game. Jared Cook, the way Carr spread the ball out for everybody. And this running game is for real. No matter who touches it, they have the ability to go the distance like Jalen Richard.
Derek in the gun. It's a toss to Richard. The Jets push that back inside, but he ran right by it. 30, 20, 10. Richard, the pocket rocket. The Jets knew the play length. They had force on that side, but he was so quick on the toss to the outside right out of the gun. He just cut back middle. Nobody laid a finger on him.
What a game for the offensive line. The Raiders ran for 180 yards. Patterson's touchdown, 43 yards. That's a great performance. Balance with the Silver and Black as Derek Carr was 23 of 28 for 230 yards. Three touchdowns and no interceptions in the game. That's what the Raiders do now. They know how to travel. We'll get to the game coming up, and they know how to finish at home. That was a game that they needed to have against the Jets, and they put them away and put up 45 points along the way. I was at the press conference after the game, and it was a lot of fun. Jack Del Rio talking and being asked about the celebration of Marshawn Lynch.
It was exceptional. I was actually very inspired. I was going to go join him, but I thought it was best if I just stayed back and continued to coach, but it got me fired up. You can see the pure passion that he has.
I've never seen anything like that. Seriously, when he started dancing, And then the cameras picked it up, and I look up at the scoreboard, and then the crowd in the upper deck is dancing. Everybody, you could feel the energy at the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum. It felt like a concert and a football game. It was the perfect storm. The tailgating was exceptional. Raider fans brought their A game. It was really a memorable home opener as the Raiders, again, had a monster game. And for Derek Carr, very humble again. It wasn't about his stats. It was about the way they were able to run the ball.
Great. You know, like I told you guys, I don't know if you believe me, but stats are cool, but I'm into winning. So I don't care if we run for 500 yards. Just the fact that I get to be a part of this team in this city, you know, be a part of something special that we're trying to do, I'm completely good with that.
All right, so let's move on to the upcoming game against the Redskins on Sunday Night Football. The Redskins got a big win on the West Coast going in and beating the Rams in a game that they had to win. We've talked about Kirk Cousins and his ability to make big plays. They have Terrell Pryor. They have an unbelievable tight end. They could run the ball. They ran it well, and they played some pretty good defense in their last game. If they lost that game and had to go back 0-2, now the Redskin fans are invigorated. They feel like they can get it done, and they've struggled mightily on Monday Night Football and Sunday Night Football. So I think this is the game at a conference, out of their division in the NFC, that they have circled the entire year. So this is a game where the Raiders, again, have to get up and play really big. They have to start fresh. It's a late starting game, which I think benefits the Raiders. And we know that Jack Del Rio knows how to travel this team. The Raiders are healthy, ready to rock. And one other point I wanted to make about Gerrion Conley. I talked to Peter King on the sidelines with about 2 minutes to go in the game. And I asked Peter, what's your takeaway? And he mentioned Conley. It was about Marshawn Lynch. He wrote about that in MMQB. But on the Connolly front, he said, it's great to see when you have a young player like that who can cover and do it in his first game, the entire defense elevates knowing that that young player can play. And I really took that with me all week as we prepped for the Redskin game, because I think with Connolly there now in the slot, one-on-one, that's a bright spot for the Silver and Black as they get ready to be a dominant football team for years to come. Let's begin with one of the best broadcasters out there, shooting up the charts because he does multiple sports, and he was in Oakland, and he called the game with Dan Fouts on CBS. Ian Eagle joins us on the official Raiders podcast. Ian, good to see you in Oakland, and how did those fans treat you on your first regular season trip to Oakland this year?
Treated me like $1 million, JT. I was welcomed warmly by Raider Nation. Thank you very much.
Isn't it great when you get a chance to walk that parking lot on a glorious sunny day? And you went to the Cuse. I grew up in Long Island, and I remember, not to date ourselves, watching Raider games, the late game, if it was Kirk Gowdy, who was ever on the call, and then you'd go from a cold, wet winter day to the sun-drenched fields of the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum, and it looked like that against the Jets.
It did, and I think the added bonus when you go to Oakland is when the team is good, and that for a long stretch of time wasn't happening. So you had all the pomp and circumstance because the Raider fans always show up enthusiastic. The difference now is the team backs up that enthusiasm. They're for real. I felt that way last year when Carr was healthy. I think they're better this year. They're more equipped this year for an extended run, and they can play different styles. I don't think this is a team that has to go out and necessarily score 35 points to win games. Defensively, I do like what they've done. I like some of the changes that were made. They're young. They're very young. And as we get deeper in the season and the stakes are raised and the stage is bigger, they're going to be tested. But I think this team has the right formula and the right personnel to now be considered legit.
Ian Eagle's our guest. Take us through your pre-broadcast meetings with the team in Alameda at the facility when you're talking to Derek Carr, Jack Del Rio, and the staff, the access that you have in the Raider facility. They put in their new training center. Jack Del Rio wanted the upgrade. Mark Davis gave it to him. Reggie McKenzie upgraded his draft room and a war room. Did you notice that as you were walking through the facility in Oakland, how the energy has changed, the atmosphere has changed, and this team is right back to winning again?
Yeah, completely different vibe from what I recognized going there year in and year out during some of the lean years. Now there is a real energy about the place. Del Rio sets the tone. But here's the interesting part, and you know this, JT. He really does empower the players. So while from the outside in, there might be those that look at Jack as old school and look at Jack as things have to be done a certain way, the reality is he gives the players a lot of latitude. That's why the Marshawn Lynch signing was not out of character. This is a guy that's allowed to be himself. Pete Carroll had the kind of makeup that made that work. Jack Del Rio has the kind of makeup that can make that work. Characters are not a big deal. They're not trying to quell the kind of characteristics that certain players bring to a locker room. And I believe that when Jack was hired, this was the perfect marriage, and it's starting to play out that way.
Let's stay on the offensive side with Rashard, Patterson, Lynch, with touchdowns on the ground. Before I even get to Jared Cook, I thought what was interesting about this game, and I'm sure it was part of your prep with the Hall of Famer Dan Fouts, is that when Carr now spreads everybody out and can even put Marshawn Lynch out wide, and Patterson can step in for Olawale and have a nice long touchdown run, when you look at the combinations that Carr has now, I thought he played on a little check down Charlie in that game, where instead of looking and throwing it into coverage, he checked down, and the Raiders had a couple of big explosive plays with those decisions.
Yeah, they're loaded on offense, and the catch and run capabilities of Rashard and DeAndre Washington and Patterson, who, mind you, really had no offensive role anymore in Minnesota. He was purely a special teams guy. They had lost faith in him as an offensive player. What do the Raiders do? Todd Downing gets creative. They sign Patterson to a substantial deal, but they're not looking at him as just a return guy. They're looking at him as an asset, and we saw that play and reveal itself in this Jets game, that all of a sudden now, if you're an opponent, upcoming opponent for the Raiders, you've got new film that you've got to watch, and you've got to be aware of Cordarrelle Patterson. So whether or not he's a huge factor offensively in week 3 or week 4 or week 5, he could be in week 6 or 7 or 8, based on the fact they're very multiple in what they can do. We haven't even gotten into Michael Crabtree, who had himself a tremendous day, and Amari Cooper, who was quiet, but at any point he could be the go-to guy. And you alluded to Jared Cook. To me, another perfect complement for Carr. Already you can see that chemistry. I think his style fits in what they're running offensively. And I think he feels the mystique in sitting down with him, talking to him about the Raiders and what the pitch meeting was like. Sitting down with Carr, Del Rio, Downing, watching film, them sharing with him how they visualized this going, and him buying it from the moment he said he sat down. He knew this was the team he was signing with.
Ian Eagle's our guest. He was on the call for CBS, the play-by-play of the Raiders beating the Jets 45-20. Before we get to the preview of the Redskins coming up on Sunday night, you mentioned Downing, and I think it's really interesting. No matter who an offensive coordinator is or even an offensive head coach on other teams, if you don't have the principles to go to a tight end and you'd rather run it more or go to the outside, then that tight end is going to be used as a blocker or he's going to be used as a disguise. I finally think the Raiders and Cook have a tight end who can clearly change the game on any play, and I think once defensive coordinators start seeing the fact that Downing and Carr are going to go down the middle of the field to Cook, that's going to open up the one-on-one coverage for Crabtree and obviously Cooper a little bit more.
Yeah, and the other element, JT, is Cook, when we sat down with him, we asked him about Downing. He said he's so easy to talk to, and he's asking for players' input. This is not something that Jared Cook is accustomed to. So then at a practice earlier that day, they were working on some red zone stuff, and Cook went over to Downing and said, hey, look, I understand the way the play is designed, but I'm actually more comfortable sliding to the right and then making my cut. And Downing said, well, then we're going to work that in. We're going to do it that way. He said he's just never been around anyone like that, that this offensive coordinator is willing to adjust based on players' input. Derek Carr echoed the same sentiments. And Carr had nothing but good things to say about Greg Olsen and Bill Musgrave. Very different approaches. He felt that Downing combines the elements of both the freedom that he's given at the line of scrimmage, which is something Jack Del Rio wanted, and also the play designs. So there are things, go-to plays that they feel confident with, run it to a T, and watch it be successful. But if Carr senses something, he's given the latitude to go out and make a change. And that's really what you're looking for, that balance. And I think they've already got it, and it's only week three.
Ian Eagle's our guest. One more point on the offense. Penn came back in before the end of the preseason. They needed him to play at left tackle. The rest of that offensive line is stout, nasty, big and strong. They compare the Raiders' offensive line to that of the Cowboys. Both of those teams will be meeting later on in the year. Just your sense of your analysis and calling the game, do you think that the Raiders really are going to have to get back to running the football in the AFC West because everybody thinks they're so explosive in the passing game? They got guys who could really pound the rock behind that big offensive line.
Yeah, they've got bulldozers up front, and that was what I was talking about earlier, the fact that they are multiple. I don't believe they have to play a certain way. There were times last year where I think the default mode was air it out, and that probably had to do with the fact that Carr was so comfortable, that these receivers were clicking with him, including Seth Roberts. The three receiver looks were successful, and I don't know if they had the same confidence in Latavius Murray to finish games. They now feel with Marshawn Lynch that they have a finisher. You're going to see the efficiency and mixing it up with those running backs. There's a reason why Richard gets as many touches as he gets. There's a reason why DeAndre Washington has a role. They have a package in there for him. They're not going to wear out Marshawn Lynch, and they're going to use that bell cow when they have to. They know they can run the football. I don't know if they felt in a pinch when the game was on the line that they could do that a year ago. This is a different philosophy, and I think there's also a reason why Todd Downing is now the offensive coordinator. I think Jack Del Rio felt there was more in the tank, that they weren't exhausting every option that they had.
I talked to Peter King in the final 2 minutes of the game on the sideline, and I said, what's your takeaway? And we were obviously talking about Marshawn Lynch and his homecoming, but Gerrion Connolly was incredible. And Peter said that when you have a guy that can cover that way, it breeds confidence to the entire rest of the defensive roster. And I thought that was very accurate because we've heard a lot about Connolly. He comes in, he's injured. We didn't see him at all in the preseason and much in training camp up at Napa. Then he jumps into a game, and it's refreshing to see a rookie who knows how to turn his head, knows how to cover, can blanket cover someone, can be in the slot. I really think he was able to showcase his talents in front of a home crowd in Oakland, and everybody got that at the end of the game, that the Raiders could have that pure cover cornerback that they've been waiting for.
Yeah, nobody doubted Conley's athletic ability. That's really the headline with him coming into the NFL. The questions you always have with guys that are considered great athletes playing the cornerback position is instincts. And when they get to the league, when things are faster, where you've got players that can put double moves on you and you don't even know what hits you, you get spun around the wrong way, and your recovery isn't like it was at the collegiate level. He did not look like a rookie from the word go, and you nailed it. This isn't a guy that got rep after rep after rep after rep. He was going off his gut instinct out there, and that is a really good sign because he just looked really comfortable, and considering this was an area where you sensed that they needed some improvement, whether it's this year or down the road, Connolly was the guy they coveted based on a need at some point, whether it's replacing Sean Smith one day, whether it's working him in as a nickel. They've got good players back there. This kid has a chance to maybe be a great player.
We're wrapping it up with Ian Eagle of CBS. I compare Khalil Mack to Lawrence Taylor because I was there for Lawrence Taylor growing up and going to Giant games. And just at a young age, I mean, the body of work is going to take 10, 12, 15 years. He's going to have to get Super Bowls under his belt. But just how ferocious he is off the ball. But talk about his principles in the running game. Pro Football Focus gives him very high grades. But I think, Ian, he's going to go through a stage in his career where he's no longer double-teamed. It's almost a triple-team with the back staying in. Is he going to get frustrated here, or do you think he's going to mature at the level we've seen already? He seems like he's a 5, 6, 7 year vet in this league.
Yeah, Dan Fouts asked him about all the chip blocks that he's seeing, and he said, yeah, I'm getting a big bag of chips every single week, and we're trying to figure out ways to adjust. And we, meaning him, the guys in his room, and the coaching staff. So it shows me a few things. One, he's a student. He cares. This is not a guy that's resting on his laurels. Two, every week is fresh to him. We asked him about being Defensive Player of the Year, and is it something that he's allowed himself to reflect on? That's quite an honor. When you're voted the best player on that side of the ball in the league, that's saying something. He said, I have to do it every week. It doesn't matter now. Nobody cares today about last year, about Defensive Player of the Year. You're right. That sounds like a 7-year vet, an 8-year vet. That's a 4th-year guy who was blossoming as he came into the league and just realizing what he was capable of. The Raiders clearly saw it. He has special talent, and he's a game wrecker. I've seen it many times. The Raider games that I've called, for whatever reason, I don't know if every announcer gets this, I feel like he always makes a spectacular play, at least one. And there have been a few games that I've called where he's made 3 or 4. That's not coincidence. That's not by accident. That's a guy that's watching film, that's adjusting to what offensive linemen are showing him and changing things up. He's not going with the fastball every time. He's realized he needs some other tools in the tool belt, and he's figuring it out.
Both the Raiders and the Redskins have won 3 Super Bowls. There's a lot of ties and connections to not only Super Bowls, but from Bruce Allen now, dating back to Joe Gibbs, to Al Davis, to players that went up against each other, John Gruden, Jay Gruden. Sunday night football in the nation's capital. Redskins got a big victory that they needed out on the West Coast. Just an overview of what you think could be an interesting matchup in this game. And again, if the Raiders can win in national television, on national TV on Sunday night on the road, go back to Denver with the opportunity to be 3-0, that's a big deal.
Yeah, I think the Redskins are still figuring it out a little bit. This offense has a lot of confidence. The defensive side of the ball is a bit of a work in progress. You know, Kirk Cousins is one of those guys that you have to respect. He has earned it. He has gotten to a point where there's a trust level in that locker room. The guys around him trust him. There's also a reason why the Redskins have not paid him the long-term contract, because in their eyes, he is their leader today, but if something better came around, they would consider it. But this is what I go on with guys at that position. If the Redskins decided to go in a different direction, would Kirk Cousins be a starter in the NFL the next day? Yes, that's the answer. There are a lot of teams out there that would take Kirk Cousins on their roster and would be more than happy to have him run the offense. Having met with him, having sat down with him, I see the passion. I understand why guys respond to him. I don't know what this team is just yet. I have a really good feeling of what the Raiders are. I think the Redskins are still in the process of trying to define and evaluate what they are.
Last one on a personal note. How much fun are you having? You're getting bigger assignments. You work multiple sports on a national level. All the work you do in the tri-state area of New York. What's it like for you? What's the next chapter in your broadcasting career?
I'm a grinder, JT, truly. I'm just of the same mentality that I had when I broke in 24 years ago doing Nets games. That really hasn't changed. I really enjoy the preparation. I like everything that goes into the game, and then I like the back and forth with my color commentators. That's really where I feel like my calling card has been, in building chemistry and trying to make it an easy listen. No matter what the sport, that's my goal time and time again. I just view this through the prism of we're a team. I always like being part of a team, and in television and in radio, you are. You're part of a team. And that's how I attack this thing. Dan and I have grown very close over the 8 years. The fact that I'm working with one of the guys that I grew up watching and respecting as a player, and then having a chance to enjoy him as a friend and as a broadcast colleague, that's just been icing on the cake more than anything else.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate your work. Thanks for doing this for us.
All right, bud. Always, JT. Great talking to you. And I'm curious. I think I'm going to see the Raiders again. And the next time I see them, I think the rest of the country is going to be on board.
Always great catching up with Ian Eagle. He does such a great job, and he really is locked in and knows a lot about the silver and black. Our next guest joins us. He is the voice of the Washington Redskins. Larry Michael joins the official Raiders podcast. And Larry, I know what those cross-country flights are like after a win. How did it feel heading home after beating the Rams?
Wow, what a game, man. It was a heck of a game. It was a pretty good atmosphere, not like the night before where the place, you know, was just absolutely full with Trojan fans. But it was hard fought. A lot of guys got banged up. And some real dramatic step-up plays. And I think Kirk Cousins had a very nice drive to wrap it up, which is something he really needed, JT.
Let's stay with that for a second in regards to the crowd count, because on the West Coast, with what's happening with the Chargers now playing at the StubHub Center and the Rams playing at the Coliseum, there are a lot of vocal critics, and there are a lot of connections to the Redskins and the Rams over the years, and these franchises knowing each other. Was it that obvious to you on the play-by-play where you were from your vantage point that there were a lot of empty seats, or is this something you think that's going to take years for that place to pack out?
Well, you know, great question. I think it's going to take some years for it to pack out. I think that's apparent, but I think that can definitely happen. I've been to the Coliseum so many times, and, you know, even half full, it can get real loud. And the thing that was startling was all the Redskins fans, to be honest. I knew that there were Redskins fans in California, and we went to a rally the night before on Manhattan Beach, and I don't know how many hundred people, they're all Redskins fans there. So I knew there were a lot of Redskins fans in California from meeting them on road trips, you know, as far west as Denver. But to me, that was the biggest Redskins crowd I've seen on the road for a long time.
Larry Michaels, tell us how the Redskins rushed for 229 yards on 39 carries with Donald up front for the Rams. And as we get to the Raiders preview, is this the strength? Because we know what Cousins can do, but that's a successful day by three players on the ground.
Yeah, it was kind of record-breaking almost. Since 1957 was the last time they had three guys rush for over 60 in a game. Wow. I think they just came out and they wanted to run it, and they were going to try to run it. I think they felt that was the best matchup for them, and it proved to be. And really, L.A. never I'm sure they tried to adjust, but whatever they did didn't work, because at the end of the game, it was the same thing as the beginning of the game. So different running back, same offensive line, but same result.
So for a big picture overview after two games so far this year, before we get to the Raiders, what are the strengths of the Washington Redskins? Grind it out, run it down your throat like we saw against the Rams, or with a franchise quarterback that's obviously playing for his future, give Cousins the opportunity to win these games? He's a true winner and a guy that likes to put the team on his back.
Both. How's that?
Yeah.
Both. Because really, when you look at it, who doesn't want to run the ball for 5.9 a game? You're not going to be able to do that every game. But who doesn't want that? It takes a lot of pressure off the quarterback. He didn't have to throw the ball as much. And thus, each throw, I think, was a little more pinpoint. I think his accuracy was much improved over week one. So that's good news if you're a Redskins fan. But I think, I knew going into the season, JT, that Coach Gruden wanted to run the ball. He knew it was important for this offense to run the ball. The last couple of years, I think the offense through the air was record-breaking 2 years in a row. But you can't think you're going to do that for a third straight year, and you've got to make some adjustments in the red zone. And so I think that's what you saw. I think that might be you had a lot of guys banged up. Jordan Reed got a little banged up, but he came back in. He showed a lot of heart. And the running back, Kelly, went out, but P. Ryan, the rookie, came in. Same result. So doesn't anybody want that?
Yeah, you want it all. You want the balance. We're talking to Larry Michael. I read the Sports Illustrated piece and watched a piece they did on ESPN 360 on Jordan Reed. It's insane what type of athlete he is and his off-season preparation. And he has been getting injured over the years because of the extremities and how hard he works out along the way to be the best at his ability. Talk about the difference when he's at 100%. I think athletically he's better than Gronkowski. He's as good as any tight end in all of football, and you can line him up everywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. If you look at the total package and you take everything into consideration, I think you're right. He's come a long way, and he has proven to me that he is one of the tougher guys on the football team. And, you know, he trains hard. I think he's learned how to train over the years. I think he's learned how to eat. like a lot of these young guys do. They got to learn, you know, what's best for their body. And it took him a couple of years to figure that out. And so he is, I don't think he's reached his peak yet, but he's headed in that direction. And he's last year against Dallas, I saw him after the game. I don't know what you call it medically, but his shoulder was out of socket after the game. And you can see this big bone up there, and they were going to have to fix that. He played the second half against Dallas with that very injury. So I wasn't surprised to see him come back yesterday. I think he's learned that. And he's a tough mismatch. You got to cover him with the corner. I think you have to. You have to consider him a wide receiver but he's a tight end, so he'll line in tight. And he really is taking more pride in his blocking, I think, than ever before. So what a good football player.
You know, another good football player who I liked a lot as a Raider was Terrell Pryor. I liked the way he showed up on game day with energy, how he was a teammate. He makes the transition to wide receiver. Talk about him at 6'4", 230, how difficult of a matchup he is just from speed and height, and he's got pretty good hands.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? He's still finding his way in the offense, and I think he's building confidence every day. New situation, new offense, new quarterback. Some adjustments for him, but what he's got, you can't teach. And he's also super smart and a hard worker. He's put a lot of time into just improving his hands, and he's had a couple of drops. And in this town, people get on you when you drop a ball, but he works even harder. And last game, in the game-winning drive, he had a big play over the middle, and he made it into a bigger play by outrunning the defender and got it inside the 20, which resulted in the game-winning touchdown to Ryan Grant a couple plays later. So I think the kid's great. I think he's super. But I think, again, you know, patience isn't a word that you hear very often during the season. You can't have patience during the season. But if that would be something that people would have, they'd be pleased with the result. Because I think, you know, and it could be a breakout game. He's playing against his former team.
Yes.
So he's got to feel something about that.
Larry Michael is our guest, the voice of the Redskins. What concerns you about the Raider offense with the new weapons they have? Obviously, Carr, Marshawn Lynch, Jared Cook at tight end. Crabtree's coming off a 3-touchdown game, and I know how much respect you have for the athletic ability of Amari Cooper.
There's just where do you want to begin? I mean, the Raiders have worked on getting a perfect team together for their quarterback, and adding Marshawn Lynch to me. I mean, obviously, I was going to say it's a genius move because he's from the Bay Area and it's a logical move at this point in his career. But, man, they can use him. There's no doubt about that. And you've got speed in the backfield. You've got the power in the backfield. And, you know, I'm expecting a very tough team. It's tough to travel east. It's tough to travel west. And we know that there's a lot of Raider fans all across the country, too. So I'm excited about it. They don't meet very much. I mean, it's like the 14th time they've met, so it's a good matchup. And you know what, Redskins have not done very well in these late night, Sunday night, Monday night games. So they want to reverse that, and the Raiders obviously want to stay unbeaten. And they're looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point about a Sunday night matchup in the nation's capital, the whole country watching, two elite quarterbacks. And even though you mentioned they haven't played each other much, we can remember the games. We can go back to the rivalry. We can go back to the Super Bowl, the success of the coaching from Joe Gibbs to John Madden, Tom Flores, all the names there. Now Jay Gruden versus Jack Del Rio. Bruce Allen was the senior assistant to GM of the team. Now it's Reggie McKenzie. I wouldn't call it, Larry, bad blood, obviously, but I know how much Mr. Snyder and Bruce want to win, and Mark Davis and Reggie and Jack want to win. This is a big primetime game. I think NBC was smart for putting this game on the schedule early.
You're getting me excited, man.
Yeah.
You're just 200% right. And you're talking about connections between these two teams. And you mentioned the GM, and you didn't mention the fact that his twin brother, is a Super Bowl champion with the Washington Redskins, Raleigh McKenzie. And there's even more. And the really odd thing is, last week it was even worse because you had Sean McVay and Jay Gruden. And you had Wes Phillips and his father, the D.C., on the opposite side. I saw those two guys at dinner together. I wonder what they didn't talk about any football. I was saying, just, you know, hey, how are the kids? You know? So this is an interesting matchup, I think, too. Yeah, I mean, they played in the Super Bowl. What more do you need to say? And both teams, I think, you know, the Raiders obviously unbeaten, so they're a very good team. The Redskins, I think, you know, they feel confident after the win. And I think they felt they should have won the first game, too, but, you know, they didn't. So, you know, you got to win at home.
Last question. Raider fans travel tremendously well. So do the Redskin fans. Both of these franchises are global, and not many franchises in the NFL can say that. Talk about your home field advantage, what you expect from your fans, as there will be Raider fans who get in. But again, I look at these attendance numbers in the nation's capital, and I look at the Redskin fans when I'm on the road. They show up. This is a hostile environment for an opposing team to come in and try to get out of there with a W.
Well, the atmosphere is going to be great. It's the 85th anniversary of the Redskins, and the fans, you know, obviously, when they sing Hail to the Redskins after a touchdown, the place shakes. Not quite like RFK, mind you, because RFK was built a little bit differently, but it's the same fan base, same fans, and, you know, there are, obviously, there's some history between these two teams. I think it's a good rivalry. I think a big stage. I think the best team's going to win. I would think that, you know, in this game, I would not be shocked if this went down the wire. I wouldn't be shocked if the Redskins, I'd be shocked if they did not play well, to be honest with you. I would expect them to play well. I think this team is barely getting going right now. And, you know, the Raiders, again, unbeaten is what you're looking for. It's a very confident team. It's a team that has high aspirations this year. And this would be a big signature win on the road. So let's kick it off, man. What are you doing here, man?
We're going to get after it good. You're the best. Thanks for doing this. And you're a frequent contributor to these shows and the podcast. Can't thank you enough for coming on.
Well, I urge everybody to listen to you, brother, because you're the best.
Thanks again to Larry Michael. He knows a lot about the combinations and the family of the Redskins going up against the family of the Raiders. There are a lot of matchups on and off the field that make this a big game coming up on Sunday night. We head back to Oakland, Alameda to be exact, from Silver and Black Productions. Eddie Pascal joins us. And Eddie, let's start with David Amerson. There should be plenty of news and motivation surrounding him as he goes up against his former team.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think in talking with David and all the Raiders cornerbacks for that matter, they always stress the importance of you have to have a short memory, right? As a cornerback, you're going to get beat. It's part of the game. It's part of the 2017 version of NFL football. You know, these receivers are so talented. They're so good that, hey, you're going to lose them from time to time. But like you said, Dave's going back to the place that drafted him, and he's tried to kind of play it down this week. But, I mean, I'd be willing to bet that there's a little extra blood pumping on Sunday night when he steps out on under those lights. And I talked to Donald Penn today about that very thing, actually. Donald obviously went to play the Buccaneers last year. And he said, you know what? If there isn't blood pumping and if you aren't a little extra amped to go against your old team, there's something wrong with you. And he said, you know, hopefully we can give David that kind of environment for, you know, for him to thrive and for him to, you know, have a very, very pleasant trip back to the West Coast.
As we were on the sidelines for the victory against the Jets, I thought Garen Conley played great because he's a corner that can play in the slot. He's fast. He turned his head around on a deflection that was almost an interception. Eddie, he just looked like he had the swagger. He looked like a veteran. It didn't look like that first home game in Oakland in a big spot was too big for him.
No, I mean, like you said, he certainly looks the part. I mean, you look at Garyon and you look and you say, this is what a prototypical NFL cornerback is supposed to look like. And you brought up the great point that he had that really impressive pass deflection. That first play, they went right at him. That's right at him. And he did not stutter. He went right back. He tipped that back. And, you know, I'm sure in hindsight, he'd like to make a little better play on it, maybe try to bring that down with an interception. But, yeah, he's looking the part. He's ready to go. And you're right. The moment did not seem too big for him. And so we'll see if he can carry that over to his first primetime game now this weekend against the Redskins. But, yeah, I mean, certainly if you're a fan of the Raiders, if you're a fan of what Ken Norton's been doing, then you should be very excited about what Conley's bringing to the table.
Obviously, Marshawn Lynch was going to get a lot of press playing in his first regular season game in Oakland. The crowd went crazy. He was dancing. It was going all the way up to the upper deck. That was a unique moment in the history of the Oakland Coliseum as all the fans seemed to pick up on what he was doing. But I want to touch quickly on Rashard in Washington and the fact that the Raiders have multiple backs that can explode at any point in time. They're protecting the football, and it's really going to open up that passing game for Derek Carr.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, I think that, you know, as the season wears on, as we get to November, as we get to December, and Marshawn really does become that quote-unquote closer for this Raiders offense, the fact that he's going to be able to have been spelled throughout the regular season is going to be huge. I think that when you look at this Raiders running game, I think when they get rocking and they get rolling and when they're at their best is when all three of those guys, Marshawn, DeAndre, and Jalen, are all geared up and ready to go. And, you know, not to mention a guy like Cordell Patterson, who had a handful of carries on Sunday as well and took one 44 yards to the house. I mean, this is a team, this is an offense filled with playmakers. And I know that Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree and those guys out wide get a lot of credit, as they should. But, I mean, this might be one of the most dynamic, if not the most dynamic running game in the NFL. And with Marshawn getting in those, you know, tough yards, those hard yards in the middle, and then you mix it up and you throw Jalen or DeAndre in it, I mean, it's kind of pick your poison for a defensive coordinator.
All right, let's wrap it up with what I think is the biggest matchup. Obviously, the Raider defense coming off a win against an inferior team in the Jets, but building confidence, now going up against one of the best tight ends I've seen athletically in quite some time in Jordan Reed, and our old friend Terrell Pryor, former quarterback for the Silver and Black, who's now a wide receiver, and he's another guy with size and strength and the ability to catch a fade route. The Raiders have to keep an eye on both of them.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to give credit where credit is due. And Terrell has completely transformed his game. He's no longer that athletic, mobile quarterback. He's a legitimate receiving threat. He was over the 1,000-yard mark last year for a reason. And now his first year in Washington with Kirk Cousins got it kind of off to a slow start. But, I mean, this is a guy, like you said, just his athletic intangibles. This is a guy you have to account for wherever he is on the field. He is that home run threat. We saw when he was the Raiders quarterback, he had the ability to, you know, take the ball down, carry it, and be gone. And as a receiver, he can do that and more and bring something to the table. So, and like you said with Reed, he's also another challenge for the Silver and Black. And, you know, Carl Joseph has had a very strong 2 weeks, a very strong start to his sophomore campaign. So I think that, you know, having him key in on the tight end is going to be something big as we go into Sunday night.
Eddie, final point. It's a primetime game. The Raiders have 5 primetime games here on the calendar. This is the first of 5 in a hostile environment. No matter how good the Redskins are, I think the Raiders are a better team coming in, but that is a tough place to play. It's going to be loud. The Raiders are going to have to play their best football to get out of there with a win.
Absolutely. And you know, Coach Del Rio said on Monday, he was asked about the time, you know, the time difference in playing at that time. He goes, hey, this is a primetime game. You get geared up for these games. These are games where you want to show you're the only show in town. Every NFL fan is watching this game, and you want to put your best foot forward and show what the Raiders are about. And, you know, hopefully everything goes to plan. The United States is going to get a really good idea of what the Raiders are going to bring to the table in 2017.
Thank you, Eddie. Join us next week. We'll preview the Denver Broncos. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Brick.
Appreciate Eddie coming on. What a great addition he's been to the official Raiders podcast. We want to wrap it up with one of my favorite sports writers. If you read the Las Vegas Review-Journal or you just care about sports, Ed Graney is one of the best sports writers in America, and now the Raiders are part of his beat. Ed, I saw you up in Napa in the preseason. Does this team, after 2 games, look better than what you saw in training camp up in Napa?
Yeah, they do. They do, JT. I mean, you and I talked before the season, and we looked at the schedule, and it gets really, really tough late. And I think, you know, you're the one who said, hey, they need to be 3-0. Right now they're 2-0. Going to play a team that I think we both agree they're better than in the Redskins, although I think it'll be a tough game on the road on a Sunday night on TV. But, yeah, I mean, defensively, I've actually been more impressed, JD. I think going into the season, we wrote about it, we talked about it, everyone said so much about it that you almost half expected, like they just were no good defensively. It wasn't going to be good. And I think after the first 2 weeks, they're pleasantly surprised defensively. You knew they'd score and you knew the offense is good, but I've been more impressed defensively than anything.
That's a really good point. The fact that it was downplayed coming out of the preseason where they didn't win, and some of the injuries that we saw to the younger defenders in the offseason or coming into training camp, that people expected not the worst, but they didn't expect this defense to be ready for prime time. Coming off the Jets, how do you look at a game like that? Because the Jets are an inferior team, but the Raiders defensively did a lot, especially with cornerback Gerrion Conley.
Yeah, and you know the small part we saw of him. It's good that he's back he's on the field finally. And I think you were telling me on my show the other day. I mean, you know, talk about a guy now who actually looks back for the ball. That right there, that's a step in the right direction for them. Because that's such a key thing for corners in that league. And when they don't look back, they really get in trouble. You know, I thought they did what. If you're going to be a really good team, in most years in that league, the really really elite teams that separate themselves. You know, they take care of business against bad teams, and they take care of it in a way that's dominating. And, you know, everyone saw the 13.5. I think most around town had a 13.5. It opened at 14. And people are like, man, that's a lot of points for an NFL game. And, because the Jets are still going to have NFL-quality players. They're just going to have guys who can play. That's a lot of points. And the Raiders ran away. Now, you know, I think near the end of the first half with the fumble on the punt and the touchdown, that turned the entire game around to where maybe it's closer in the second half to where, you know, then the Jets had little to no life after that happened. But still, the Raiders and winning the way they did, I think that's what good teams do. That's what really good teams do. They separate from bad teams.
Ed Graney joins us from the Las Vegas Review-Journal covering the Raiders, all sports, and as a sports talk radio host. Ed, what did you think of Marshawn's Lynch celebration? Some people could take it the wrong way. I look at it as that was his first real game in Oakland. Ricky Henderson lit the torch. It was all about Oakland in a blowout win. Other teams might take exception, but I think it was more about him enjoying the moment. He was really living in that space, having a good time.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially at the NFL level, I think this league, a lot of the times at the official and the league level, get way too serious. These guys are pros. They make a lot of money. I don't think I never think the players get caught up in it as much as fans do. I don't think if I'm on the other side of the Jets, I'm like, hey, how do we score? Who cares if he's dancing? I mean, you know, good for him. He's home. It's his homecoming. It usually tends me to be fans that worry about that kind of stuff. I think guys at this level, that's why I always laugh when they give them the excessive celebration penalties. Who cares? These guys are millionaires playing a game. I mean, I don't think the other guys on the other side of the field, you know, now, you know, maybe if you're up 20 and you're on the one with a minute left and you run it in, then I could say, okay, are you rubbing it in and stuff like that. But when it comes to celebration and dancing, I always think it's a kind of us problem, not them problem. I can't imagine people on the other team really care what he was doing. I thought it was great for him. Those fans love him. He gave the free Skittles away across Oakland and the Bay Area and up by Cal where he went to school that day. I mean, you know, and he was just reacting to being home. He wanted to come and play for this team for however long it's going to be, one or two seasons or whatever he's going to play for them. I thought it was great. And I don't think the Jets would have gotten caught up with it. I hope they wouldn't have, because I think they have more things to worry about.
And one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you is you have tremendous access already with the Raiders. But being in Las Vegas, and we've talked privately as friends, is this is not the time to poke the grizzly bear, which is the Oakland Raider fans who care about winning a Super Bowl now. And being in Oakland for the Jet game, the fans were celebrating. The tailgate was as good as tailgates that I've seen over the last 15 years. It was that type of excitement. I didn't talk to a lot of Raider fans that day. They don't want to talk, obviously, about Vegas for the right reasons. And it's still 3 years away. Tell our audience how you're covering the team and respecting the long-term connections in Oakland and Southern California and knowing that the Raiders are global.
Yeah, we had to make a decision, I think, as a newspaper going in, are we going to do it halfway or full way? And we made a decision we're going to do it full way. So we hired a beat writer to live in Oakland, Michael Gelkin, terrific beat writer who had covered the Chargers for several years in San Diego. He's now covering them for us and living there. I go to the games. We have a videographer. But I think we do it in a respectful way. I mean, Michael Gelkin covers the Raiders as if they're the Las Vegas Raiders on a daily basis with the news and the breaking news and the tweets and all that. He covers them just like they're here. As a columnist, you know, I think I'll go in and react to each game. It's hard not being up there during the week. So to really go hard line one way or the other, I think might be disingenuous at this point or unfair until they get here. I can just react in the moment. But I think we made the decision as a paper that we were going to cover them like they were Vegas' team. And I completely agree with you. I was telling you, my colleague Ron Kantowski was up there for the game with the Jets. And, you know, he went on Twitter saying, hey, you know, I did turn my credential around while I was walking through the tailgaters because there were a lot of, choice words on T-shirts about Vegas. And I get that. I mean, they're going to lose their team. And that's not good in any realm, in any sport. So I think we've been respectful to it, and I think we'll continue to be respectful to it. And like you said, it's 3 years. I mean, that's a long time, but we'll do the best we can, and we'll continue to cover them like they're Vegas' team. And I will tell you this, JT, on our website, the number one sports hit story every day will be whatever we write on the Raiders. So someone's reading and someone's interested in them.
Appreciate Ed joining us. And again, you can find him at the Las Vegas Review Journal. Again, Eddie Pascal, Larry Michael, the voice of the Redskins, and the great Ian Eagle from CBS. Sunday Night Football, Raider Nation, really appreciate you tweeting out the podcast, sending it, downloading it on iTunes, and just staying with Raiders.com. How sweet does Raiders.com look this year with all the video content you need before, during, and after the games, all the analysis, Lincoln Kennedy, all the great jobs that you see during the week from Chris Townsend and Jack Del Rio, the entire staff at Silver and Black Productions that puts together some of the best content in all of the NFL. I'm JT the Brick. Have a great week. We'll get you ready for the Denver Broncos next week on the official Raiders podcast.
Thanks for listening to this installment of the official podcast of the Oakland Raiders.